Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudhapada Kamaham Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Savetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanda Radha Kanda Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Gevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udada Pasta Vegam, Etan Vegam, Yovisa Hita Dira, Sthairam Bhaktimam, Prativijanasa Sishya. So earlier we spoke about Vachavegam, a little about Manasavegam, and we mentioned how Manasavegam is connected with Prodavegam. Because when someone is not satisfied with their desires, then they become angry. Jayato Vishayam Pumsa Sangasteshu Pajayate. Krishna describes this in the Gita. Sangha Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Vajayate. If we don't control our mind, if we become attached to certain things, then when we don't obtain those things, we naturally become angry. Srila Prabhupada speaks about this anger in his purport. Page 5. He says, similarly, anger can be controlled. We cannot stop anger altogether, but if we simply become angry with those who blaspheme the Lord or the devotees of the Lord, we control our anger in Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became angry with the miscreant brothers Jagai and Madai, and who blasphemed and struck Nityananda Prabhu. In his Sikshashtaka, Lord Chaitanya wrote Trinadapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sahishnuna. One should be humbler than the grass and more tolerant than the tree. One may then ask why the Lord exhibited his anger. The point is that one should be ready to tolerate all insults to one's own self, but when Krishna or his pure devotee is blasphemed, a genuine devotee becomes angry and acts like fire against the offenders. Krodha, anger, cannot be stopped, but it can be applied rightly. It was in anger that Hanuman set fire to Lanka, but he is worshipped as the greatest devotee of Lord Ramachandra. This means that he utilized his anger in the right way. Arjuna serves as another example. He was not willing to fight, but Krishna incited his anger. You must fight. To fight without anger is not possible. Anger is controlled, however, when utilized in the service of the Lord. So this anger is a great stumbling block on the path of spiritual life. And this is one of the reasons why Rupa Goswami gives this description, tells us this is one of the krodha, one of the vegas that we have to control, this krodha vega. If we don't control this anger, it'll be very, very difficult. It won't be possible for us to enter into Krishna consciousness, as we described yesterday. This verse, in and of itself, is not describing sadhana. It's not even describing bhakti. But it's describing that thing which is like a doorway by which we enter into bhakti with. The point being that if we don't control these urges, we have no adhikar, we have no capacity or qualification to understand anything about bhakti. Krishna describes anger in the Gita. In the 16th chapter, he says, Trividam narakashidam dvaram nasanam atmanaha kama krodhistata lobas tasmat etat tvayam tujya. There's three gateways to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And every sane person should give these things up. This anger is a great stumbling block in spiritual life. Swayambhuva Manu, he told Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj was so angry, and he was killing all the yakshas without any good cause. He told them, Patipam Shreyasamparam. He said that anger, probably translates this, is that anger is the foremost enemy on the path of self-realization, or spiritual realization. Anger is our greatest enemy. A wise person gives up anger because anger clouds over our consciousness. Kama krodha bijayate, krodha bhavati samoha. From this krodha comes samoha, bewilderment, illusion. We don't know what's right or what's wrong. We become very, very angry. You see, an angry person doesn't think, oh, if I strike this person, I may hurt him, I may even kill him. I may have to go to prison for the rest of my life. He's not thinking in a rational way like that. That anger clouds his consciousness. So, Sukadeva Goswami describes in 7th canto of Bhagavatam, Shoka moha bhaya krodha raga klaibya shamadayat yanmulasyur ninamjayat spriham pranayator buddha. Intelligent people in human society give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, unnecessary labor. The original cause of all these things is desire for unnecessary prestige and money. This is the cause of anger. We have some misconception about ourselves. Therefore, a genuine devotee, someone who's realized their position, they're naturally the most humble person. Because they see their position as being very, very insignificant. But someone who's living in this world of names, who has dressed himself up in all kinds of upadis, the way that someone dresses himself up when they go to the shopping mall and they buy all kinds of clothes and things. They put themselves in so many different costumes and decided, yes, I am this thing, I am that thing. These upadis also necessarily generate anger. Because we adopt upadis ourselves, and we address other people according to those upadis. We say, this person is my friend. Just like every young girl in school, she has a best friend. And they get together and they say, you and me, we're the best friends. Like that. And maybe she has a boyfriend also. And then if a week later she sees her best friend walking along with her boyfriend, she becomes very, very angry. Why does she become angry? Partly because that person's not behaving according to the upadi that I've given them. But we know many times in India, one of the most difficult things for someone to join the Krishna conscious movement is family life. Isn't it? With their parents, they want the young man to get married and this thing and go to school, and you want to do what? So those parents, they love their children. And they give them some designation. You're my son, you're my child. But that designation, that upadi, comes with it a certain idea of control. And if you don't behave according to the upadi, the designation that I've given you, then I'm going to feel great frustration and anger. Why do you want to join this Hare Krishna movement? Nonsense. They become furious. And they do some violent thing. Just like we see a child also tries to exhibit this anger. But a child can't exhibit any anger against anyone. He's frustrated. So then that child takes out its anger on some toys. These are my toys. And I'm bigger than you. And because you belong to me, because I've given you this upadi, then you belong to me. And I can do whatever I want to with you. So giving these upadis takes away something of the personalism of that living entity that we're given, we're assigning the upadi to. We've taken away some of its independence. And in assigning it this title, we said, now you belong to me, and you have to behave the way that I want. And if we don't do that, then we become angry. Right? And this anger is a very, very bad thing in spiritual life. Because this anger, one may commit offenses to the Vaishnavas, and may even commit offenses to the spiritual master or the deity. So we naturally have some anger in us. And Srila Prabhupada is discussing in his purport, it's not that we have to give that thing up, but we should utilize it in Krishna consciousness. If we see someone doing some bad thing to the devotees or to the spiritual master, we should become very, very angry. And that kind of anger purifies our heart. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Hanuman, our revered spiritual master. He also used to use the example of Hanuman in this regard. And he said that once someone was speaking about the Ashoka Grove in Lanka. And they said it was so beautiful. There's so many beautiful green trees and bushes and things, and so many different kinds of flowers, and yellow flowers, and blue, and green, and red, and so many different things. And Hanuman was listening to that description. And he said, no, that's not true. It wasn't like that at all. There was no colors there. Krishna said, no, I mean, there's so many different colors there. No, that's not true. Everything was red. He said, that's all there was. It was just red. Because Hanuman was so furious. He was so very, very angry. He couldn't see anything properly. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says in one place that the nature of a Kanishtha Adhikari is that he has some faith in the Uttam, what he sees to be an Uttam. And he doesn't appreciate the Madhyam. He criticizes the Madhyam. Because he's sentimental. He or she is sentimental. They think, oh, the Uttam, I saw this person. He's treating everybody equally. He's going to hearing classes in all the different temples. He's reading all the books, associating with everyone. He's going to sometimes a Christian church and sometimes a mosque. Sometimes this or that. They think that person's an Uttam. And they see some Madhyamadhikari who may be chastising or criticizing people. Hey, you can't do that. You can't watch television in the Brahmacharya Ashram. Not good. So, why is this person so angry? This is not good. You shouldn't be angry. Just like Ramachandra Puri, he started trying to instruct Ishwara Puri at the end of his life. He said, why are you crying like this? You shouldn't cry. Nasochati na kamshati. Sama sarveshi bhuteshu. You should be on the Brahman platform. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. So he didn't understand. So Kanishtha may behave like that. So we should be very, very careful. So this is something about anger. Rupa Goswami describes this anger is a very detrimental thing for our spiritual life. So he says we have to give this thing up. After that, Rupa Goswami, he describes jiva vega. Jiva means the tongue, the urge of the tongue. And Srila Prabhupada, he's given a long description in his purport, which is mostly, if you look in the Bengali, it's mostly a translation of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary. We can read a few little things from it. Well, it says there are six kinds of rasas, tastes. And if one is agitated by any one of them, he can control by the urges of the tongue. It's on page 10. Some persons are attracted to the eating of meat, fish, crabs, eggs, and other things produced by semen and blood eaten in the form of dead bodies. Others are attracted by eating vegetables, creepers, spinach, or milk products, but all for the satisfaction of the tongue's demands. Such eating for sense gratification, including the use of extra quantities of spices like chili and tamarind, is to be given up by Krishna-conscious persons. The use of pan, haritaki, betel, nuts, various spices used in pan making, tobacco, LSD, marijuana, opium, liquor, coffee, and tea, is indulged in to fulfill illicit demands. If we can practice accepting only remnants of food offered to Krishna, it is possible to get free from Maya's victimization. vegetables, grains, milk, excuse me, fruits, milk products, and water are proper foods to offer to Krishna, as in the Lord Himself prescribes. However, if one accepts prasad only because of its palatable taste, and thus eats too much, he also falls prey to trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. So this is a Shastric injunction Krishna speaks about in the third chapter of the Gita. Yagya shishnasina santo muchante sarva kilvisa bunjate te tukam pa pa yipanchatma karana. Devotees of the Lord, they're released of all kinds of pap, all kinds of sin, because first they eat prasad, things which have been offered to Krishna. But he says that other people who don't take this prasad, who eat food for their own personal enjoyment, they're verily eating only sin. Similarly, Raghunath Das Goswami, he's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Something cooked by a materialistic person, then our mind becomes contaminated. And when our mind is contaminated, it's not possible to think of Krishna. This is the reason why we don't take things that are cooked by non-devotees. It's not just because we're afraid of pot. Krishna in the Gita, he tells the devotees, what does he say? What's his final, most conclusive instruction, the Charma Shloka? They say in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, what is that verse? Sarva Dharma Pratyagya, Mami Kamsha. He says, give up all types of dharma. He doesn't say Sarva Papa Pratyagya. He says a very, very interesting thing. Very interesting. He doesn't say give up sin. He says Sarva Dharma Pratyagya, give up dharma. You give up dharma, and if you do that, then aham tvam sarva papi. Moksha Yasham Nasucha. I'll protect you from pop. Krishna's directly protecting the devotee. The devotee doesn't have to do any prayaschitta, as we were reading and describing yesterday. It's not necessary. In fact, it's an offense. It's one of the offenses of the holy name, because we should be taking shelter of Krishna. Dharma Brahmatya Bhutari Sarva Subha Priyasam Api Pramana. If we think that, oh, I need to do some prayaschitta, or there's some other thing on the level of the holy name, fasting, or going into the tirthas, doing this thing or that thing, that's some namaparad. We don't take shelter of those things. Similarly, the reason why we avoid eating things which are not prasad is not because devotees are afraid of karma or pop. No question of that. But devotees, they're afraid. They don't want their consciousness to become covered over. Therefore, it's described in the Karma Purana, Vaishnava anami boktavyam tattvyanam Vaishnava sada avaishnava anantu parivarjam amedyata. A Vaishnava, if he's doing madhukari, he's begging, or if he's accepting some food in general. When he accepts that food, he only accepts that food from another Vaishnava. He says, even if someone, Karma Purana says, even if someone is not a Vaishnava, but they may be a Brahmin, still that food should be rejected as uneatable. And Sanatana Goswami, he quotes this verse in Hari Bhakti Vilas, in his Digdarshini Tika. He says it, if a Brahmin is not a Vaishnava, even if he's given money for his food is considered equal to that of a Sudra. And he can be criticized for this. So Vaishnavas don't take food even from Brahmins if they're not Vaishnavas. There's a similar description also in Padma Purana. Ambarisha Vihe Pakram
یاد بیشتم صدق منها انی دیدیا حریر بوندن سبت پلتا مینا رکی. The Lord tells Ambarish Maharaj, you see, Gautama Rishi tells Ambarish Maharaj, that, O Ambarish, if anything desirable is being prepared within the house, if it's eaten without first offering it to Narada, that person has to suffer in hell for 7 kalpas. Someone takes something without first offering it to Krishna. We should be careful. Sometimes we see in the temples, what is it, the temple in Pujari has to lock up the deity sweets. There's people come in the middle of the night and steal those things. What do you think? Very, very dangerous thing. You steal the prasadam. We'll tell them to say that. But don't steal the door. Very, very terrible. It belongs to Krishna. Krishna's the witness of that. So we should only take things which are offered to Krishna. If we only take things which are offered to Krishna, then our mind becomes peaceful. And then we can think of Krishna. This principle of eating, of being careful about what we eat, is found amongst all different types of transcendentalists. I've seen yogis, I know one, Mataji, she's a, she passed away a few years ago, she was in the Vallabha Sampradaya. And she went from the age of 15 or something up to the age of like 85. She wouldn't eat anything cooked by anyone else. She never did it her whole life. She only cooked for herself. She had a very, very strict rule. And you see different sadhus who are like that. But we should be careful about that. There's a nice example in the Mahabharata. When Drupada, he was very, very angry with Dronacharya. And he wanted to perform some jagya by which he would get a son that could kill Dronacharya. So he heard about two Brahmins in Yajna and Upayajna. And someone told him that these two, they're very, very qualified, so you should go and see him. So he went to Upayajna and he served him so many ways, and he asked for some boon. Please do some jagya so I can get his son to kill Drona. And Upayajna said, no, forget it. It's a very bad thing. Drona is also a Brahmin. I won't talk to you. Tell it out there. But Drupada kept serving him with sincerity. And finally, Upayajna became pleased. And he said, look, I'm not going to do this thing for you. This is wrong. He said, but I'll tell you what. You should go and see my brother, Yajna. He might do it for you. He's not so strict. He said, I see, you can understand how strict a person is by according to how they eat. And I saw my brother, one time, he was walking through the forest and he picked up a piece of fruit off the ground. It was contaminated. And he ate that thing. And he's always talking about food. So I think he must be materially very greedy. So you go and ask him, he may do this thing. And Maharaj Bhupada did. And he actually did that. So, we should be careful about what we eat. We should be careful about the source of it. There are many, many stories in this regard. One such famous story is about Govindaji. Once there was one prostitute who was living in Bengal. And at a certain point, she came to understand that her business is a very terrible one. And she felt remorse and decided she wanted to give up her bad ways. So she went to Jaipur, and before she went there, she surrendered to the Pujari, and she told the Pujari that I had some dream. Krishna told me to come here. Krishna told me to sell everything that I had. I accumulated so many things through my business. I had so much wealth, and I sold all that. And Krishna told me that I should collect some money and I should come here and give it to you for the Lord to be saved. And the Pujari, he understood something about this principle and about Krishna. He said, no, we won't accept that. This is not good money. It's bad money. And she felt very disappointed. She left that night. Govindaji came in a dream to the Pujari. Hey, what are you doing? I told her to come to you. You take that money And with that money, you buy so many different types of foodstuffs. And you offer a big feast. And then you have a big loja, and you invite all the sadhus. And you give them that prasadam. So that priest woke up the next morning, and the prostitute again came and said, "I'm very sorry, I had a dream. But if you said that, I should accept it now." So he took that, and he did as he told him. And he invited all the sadhus, and he had a big feast. The sadhus were very happy. That night, all the sadhus were disturbed. And the next morning, they came back to that priest. They were complaining, "Hey, what was this? He gave us this food and it wasn't good. And some bad things happened to us last night." We became very disturbed in the mind. "Why is this? Where did you get that money from this feast?" The priest said, "Well, actually, there was one prostitute. She came and gave them money." And we, "What?" And we're so, "This is good. Wasn't me." I said, "Govindaji, you came in my dream and you told me to do this." But he all decided they would drown themselves in a suicide because the Christians against you. Who can save you? And that night, they had a dream. And Krishna came to them. And he said, "Hey, why you can't control your tongue, jiva vega? Why were you all so greedy to have that prasadam?" And they said, "We dream, but it's prasadam. We should take it, it's your remnants." He said, "No, you should inquire where this came from. And you could have taken a tulsi leaf and touched everything and honored that prasadam that way. And taken that thing." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also taught us in that way when he was in Jagannath Puri. Sometimes the devotees would bring him Mahaprasad, and Mahaprabhu would tell them that, "You give me the ordinary preparations." There's no ordinary preparations here. Mahaprasad is all chamatkar, very wonderful. But some things are more common than others. And he would take the simple preparations. He refused to take the opulent preparations. So Srila Prabhupada is telling us that we should take prasad. And how should we take prasadam? What does prasadam mean? For those devotees who grew up in Bengal, who grew up in Bengal? Would you? Raise your hand if you grew up in Bengal. If you take prasadam and there's no rice, will you be satisfied? No? A risk of devotees are the same way. Once we had one of the devotees working with us, and we got into an MBT restaurant. He's a village away from Arista. He worked so hard. So I got in there and I said, "Guruji, you should have some very, very nice Asian preparations." And we got him some lasagna, pizza, cakes, this thing and that thing. And he was eating everything. I was feeling very happy with Arista because he worked very hard to help us. So that we're giving him a big treat. And I'm watching him and he looked very sad. And I said, "Guruji, what's wrong?" And he gives this nice food. And like a little child, he said, "I want some rice." So, that's our nature. Because we like whatever our mother prepared for us. I've been living in Arista for 14 years. I like Indian things. I don't really like Western things. But I have to admit, if someone comes with some preparations, vegetarian preparations, that my mother used to cook, there's something special. So that same principle is there with Krishna. And when we cook, bhakti means that we're doing something for Krishna's pleasure. That's prasad. Not that we decide, "Oh, I like this thing." Prabhupada says in his purport, he's saying that prasad means something for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu, for the pleasure of Krishna, not for our time. Not that, "Oh, I like pizza very, very much." So now in Mayapur, there's a pizza shop every 5 feet. Is that for the pleasure of Krishna? Can we read in Bhagavad-gita, Krishna Bhajanamrita, these other literatures, that Mother Yashoda was making pizza, designed for Krishna? Are we taking it when we take that thing? Are we doing it out of service to Krishna? That doesn't mean that those things are demoniac or they shouldn't be done. But it means that if we're serious about spiritual life, we should think about this. Sometimes devotees take it to another extreme. And they say, oh, Krishna won't accept these things are very bogus. But you know, Krishna accepts a lot of things. But through his wife, Sujodana ko bhogana kayo rupa sada vidhara kayo. That on one occasion when Krishna came unannounced to Vidura's house, and he said some Spanish was given him. Sometimes it's said that Vidura's wife, in ecstasy, she was offering Krishna bananas and peeling them as fast as she can and offering them to Krishna. But in her ecstasy, she forgot one small thing. She was throwing the fruit away and giving the peels to Krishna. Krishna was eating them. Very nice. Very, very nice. So if someone offers something with devotion, Krishna's love them to mind, he'll accept that. And seeing sometimes a devotee may do something for preaching also. For example, we've been to Singapore and Malaysia before, and if you try to have some prasadam restaurant for non-devotees to encourage them to come and get some taste, you don't serve tofu, you don't put some chilies in them, no one will come. And can you imagine in Italy, if they have a restaurant with no bread, no pizza, no one will come. They have to have something. They think they'll die. It's like our friend from Orissa that would die after God knows. They have to have those things. So we're not fanatics like that. But we want to offer to Krishna those things that Krishna likes. And what does Krishna like? Krishna likes bhakti. And whose bhakti does he like? He likes the bhakti of Srimati Radharani. And Mother Yashoda. He likes the things that are cooked by them. Rupa Goswami gives a nice description in his Believe the mother. And when Krishna was rescuing Rukmini and Sishupala and all the different kings there, he got his chariot, got his weapons, and everything ready to fight against all these Kshatriya kings, and he picked up his conch shell to give it a mighty blow. And then Rupa Goswami says that suddenly Krishna fell into an ecstatic trance and he's holding the conch shell. Because when he put that conch shell to his mouth, remember the breast of Mother Yashoda. Krishna's so attached to Mother Yashoda. So we want to offer to Krishna those kinds of things that Mother Yashoda cooks for him, for his pleasure. That's prasadam. And if we offer those things for his pleasure, then eating, taking that prasadam, that'll purify us of our material desires. If we offer something through the agency of our Gurudev that's pure vegetarian thing, chant the mantras and things, isn't that certainly will become purified? Maybe become some kind of prasadam. We don't know. But it's not going to protect us from lust. So we should do like that. Another indication when we speak about Jivadeva is that we should take Mahaprasad. Sometimes in Jagannath Puri, the pundits, they say that only Jagannath Prasad is Mahaprasad. Why is that? Because it's offered first, after Jagannath's taken that prasad, then it's offered to God as Bhimavati. And your prasad is so famous that one great personality in our mind is named after it. Is that? Yom Prasad, So that's called Mahaprasad. Because it's offered after Jagannath, it's offered to Bhima Devi. She's a Vaishnavi, so it becomes Mahaprasad. So if we take that Mahaprasad, then it has even a greater effect. There's many, many stories in this connection. We won't go so long into them. There's one story of Ramanuja, who had one disciple, a couple, man and woman. And this woman, there's one lusty man who's always coming to their house and harassing her. And Ramanuja sent some message with one of his disciples to that village that he was coming. And he sent that disciple with his messenger to the home of one of his rich disciples. And that rich disciple was so ecstatic hearing that his Guru Maharaj was coming that he forgot to give any water and any sweet words to that messenger. And then when that messenger devotee went back to Ramanuja, Ramanuja asked him, so tell him, yes, I told him, how did he treat you? know, she was very happy to hear about you. Just happy to have. Did he give you some water? Did he give you something to eat? Was he nice with you? No. She didn't even think about this thing. So then she will run and you tried to decide that I won't worry. And unannounced, he went to the house of this very, very poor couple. And when he went there, the man really had no money. He was out begging alms. And the wife, she greeted her grandmother. She was very surprised. Oh my God, I don't have even any property to put on myself. And she put whatever thing she had on. And how am I going to feed grandmother and all these devotees there? And then she remembered that lusty, loving man. So she went to his house. And she said, oh, my dear sir, I've been thinking about things and I agree. I'll go along with your lusty desires. But yes, I'm your place. Will you please give me some nice foodstuffs so I can cook for my mortgage? So that rich man was very, very happy. Finally, she agreed with his lusty desires. So he gave him so much nice paneer and foodstuffs, and she cooked a big feast for my mortgage. And then her husband came home. And so, she said, gosh, how are we going to serve him? And he smelled some nice thing in the air. So there's so much nice beside. And called his wife off to the side. What happened? She told him. I promised this thing. He became very, very happy. What is it? You are truly a chaste wife. And you understand the principle of love. Then Ramanuja, he's eating this meal, and he finished, and he called for that man and his wife. And he said, I know you're very poor. Where did you get the money for this? You tell me, honestly. And the wife, she ran her head down. She said, Gurmash, this wealthy man is harassing me like this. I agree with his desires. And I'm going to hurt that. And he was so very pleased and touched by her genuine devotion. So then he told them, he said, here, here's a little bit of remnants from my plate. You take and give that to that man. And then tell him you're ready to do whatever he likes. So it was finished. So she went there, knocked on the door. Came here. Very happy. She said, oh, one thing, I brought you some mahaprasad from my neighbor. The man was pious enough to appreciate the remnants of the saint were special. So he ate that man. And suddenly he had a whole change of character. And he became very emotional. My God. I'm this very chaste Vaishnava and I'm trying to tell you about this. He cried. He fell at your feet, you please forgive me. And then he went to Ramanuja and became a disciple of Ramanuja. This is the power of Mahaprasad. On another occasion, Ramanuja once took some of his remnants and threw them in the water. And two fish and they manifested four forms and went back to Vaikuntha in front of him. There's another nice story also. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, he was traveling, he was preaching in one village, and the people there were very happy, and they cooked for him, they offered him some prasad. And he finished that prasad, there was a little bit left on his plate, and he got up to go wash his hands. Meanwhile, a cat came in the room. The cat went over to Srinivas Acharya's plate, ate some of the remnants from his plate. And then he heard someone coming, the cat ran out before they came. Cat went to the next house. In the next house, it just so happened, they just had a Shraddha ceremony. Some part of the ancestors, a materialistic person. And they had this plate of prasad that they were ready to eat. And the woman, she made that plate of prasad, she put it down, and then she was going to eat. So, oh, first I should wash my hands. So she got up in the other room, she was washing her hands, and the cat came in. Cat started eating from her plate. Same cat had just eaten from the plate she was in charge of. Then he heard the woman coming back and he ran out before she came in. She didn't know the cat had eaten off her plate. She sat down and she started taking it on the side. And suddenly, a very strange thing happened. She started shaking and praying uncontrollably. Those problems were coming to her body. She couldn't speak. And her family members came and he, what's going on? Some Buddha. Ghost, huh? Someone say, you know, there's a sadhu next door we are visiting. We should call him, maybe he can be the ghost buster. He can drive this ghost away. So they called for Srinivas Acharya. came and saw what happened. He said, oh, I understand. Excuse me, she was eating some normal, this normal food. And then he told me, you give her some of the remnants of this shrub. And she ate that thing, and then immediately her ecstatic symptoms went down. So it's just an odd massage. But that massage should be offered for the pleasure of Krishna. That's Jiva Veda. Even for devotees, we have to be very, very careful. This thing. If we're serious, and we don't condemn other persons, there's many devotees, very, very difficult. The tongue is very voracious and uncontrollable. Very, very difficult. And very difficult to conquer the tongues. Very few people can do that. And we don't condemn someone if they want to eat things which are in their native land, the things that they like. We just encourage everyone to chant Hare Krishna. But we want to speak this thing. Because this is our Bodhisattva, because Srila Prabhupada says it. Because if someone is really serious, then they will want naturally to offer things to Krishna which Krishna likes. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada says, and he speaks about, Rupa Goswami speaks about udara, that we should control this urge of the belly. Prabhupada speaks about this in the purport. Those who suffer from diseases of the stomach must be unable to control the urges of the belly, at least according to this analysis. When we desire to eat more than necessary, we automatically create many inconveniences in life. However, if we observe fasting days like Ekadasi and Janmashtami, we can restrain the demands of the belly. Demands of the belly doesn't mean that all the devotees should be thin. Although Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was unhappy when he saw that his sannyasis were fat. We also read in the Bhagavatam about that personality that Prahlad Maharaj came across. He was like a python man. He was very, very fat. He was doing it. But he was very detached. He was a self-realized soul. He was just eating what came naturally. And sometimes so many nice things would come, so he would eat that. And sometimes nothing would come. But he would do that. He really wasn't very disturbed by that. Just like sometimes Gorky showed his Babaji. He was doing his bhajan on the bank of the Ganga. And sometimes he's sitting there chanting for 2 or 3 days. And the stomach would start saying, hey, remember me? We have a problem here. You have to give me something. I'm hungry. And then Gorky Shore would become a little annoyed with his stomach. So he would reach over and grab some mud from the Ganga and eat that. All of a sudden, shut up. Leave me alone. So that we can't imitate. We shouldn't do that. Krishna does like that. We're sure that Babaji does like that. We can't imitate that. At the same time, we should avoid this udarve, this desire to overeat. The Manasaheta describes anarogyam anarayushyam asvaryam cha atibhojan. Apunyam lokati dishma tasmata parivarja. Eating too much causes disease. It reduces the duration of life. It removes feelings from the mode of goodness. It's a very interesting thing. Maybe we've all experienced one time or another. You do this as an experiment, a very happy experiment. Go to MBT and eat the very nicest, most opulent things on your menu. Let's see how you feel. Naturally, we will feel somewhat proud and somewhat intoxicated. When we overeat, or when we eat things that are very, very opulent, some pride comes. Analyze yourself. And then you try to eat some simple fruits, some simple prasadam, fasting, speak fasting. You see that naturally we become very humble. We think ourselves very, very insignificant. The nature of overeating is we start thinking that I'm Indra. I'm a great king, I can do whatever I like. I'm a great, great personality. So Manasamhita says that overeating removes feelings in the mode of goodness. It causes one to become unmeritorious and unbeneficial. Therefore, one should give up overeating. So overeating is one of the obstacles. The body. It's not that This is a requirement of the Nature of Brahma. These are all things which bewilder the mind, which cause some different types of intoxication by which we can't think of Krishna properly. So we'll stop for 5 to 10 minutes and that brings me to the last two items in this verse. Vasudeva and Ekam Devam Yo Visimam Sarvam Abhimanyu.